I had originally planned to do this last week. We're going to go to the book of Ruth tonight and talk about Kinsman Redeemer. The reason I brought this up is that I had been interested in a few of the things here and on the whole idea of redemption. And then in days after that, Jim started talking about Jesus redeeming Israel and spent the entire morning talking about that subject, which tells me, well, I must have been on the right subject because we're just going to do it from Ruth and talk about the Kinsman Redeemer in Ruth. So if we could just stop and pray for a minute and just pause and get our thoughts together. Our Father in heaven, holy is your name. We thank you for this opportunity to meet once again and to witness your word and be strengthened by it. We thank you for providing all of us with safe travel to be here tonight, and we pray that you'll give us safe travel home. We hope, Father, that you will be glorified by what is said tonight. May what I say be something that you would want me to say. And, Father, we pray that you will be blessing the service tonight. And we ask this all in Jesus' name. Amen. So if you'd like to go to the book of Ruth, that's where we're going to be. And there's going to be some board work. As I started writing and thought about what I was going to end up putting up there, I was wishing I had a board twice as big. So Gladys took one look at it, saw how small the letters were, and she moved up considerably. I will verbalize this as best I can in case you're having trouble seeing it, but I did a little head start here just so I wouldn't be too sloppy in my writing. So let's go to the book of Ruth and start in chapter 1. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. And a man of Bethlehem in Judah went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife Naomi. And the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem in Judah, and they went to the country of Moab and remained there. So as we look at our diagram up here, we've got the father, Elimelech, Naomi. This is the basic way we draw out things in family trees and genetic pools and stuff like that. So father and mother there, they have two sons. I didn't bother writing down their names because they're about to disappear. They don't last long. We go on verse 3. But Elimelech, the husband of Naomi, died, and she was left with her two sons. These took Moabite wives. The name of one was Orpah, right there, and the name of the other, Ruth, the central person in the book. These women only know Moab because they are Moabites. They are not Judahites. They are not from Israel. Their entire life has been spent in Moab. They lived there about 10 years, and both Mahlon and Chilion died, so that the woman was left without her two sons and her husband. So the sons die, Elimelech the father dies, and we're left with only Naomi and her two daughter-in-laws, who are Moabites. She arose with her daughters-in-law to return from the country of Moab, for she had heard in the fields of Moab that the Lord had visited his people and had given them food, which is a long way of saying the famine in Israel is finally over. Naomi, Ruth, and Orpah had no husband to provide for them. And Naomi, knowing the famine was over in Judah, she decides to go back to her homeland. So she set out from the place where she was with her two daughters-in-law. But they went on the way to return to the land of Judah. But Naomi said of her two daughters-in-law, "Go return each of you to your mother's house." The reasoning is pretty obvious. The two daughters are Moabites, are very comfortable in Moab. They know people in Moab. If Naomi takes them back to Judah, they will be complete strangers there, and the only person they will know for starters will be Naomi. In verse 12, she says, "Turn back, my daughters. Go your way, for I am too old to have a husband." Now, they've only been in Moab 10 years. but yet Naomi thinks she's too old to have a husband. If I should say I have hope, even if I should have a husband this night and should bear sons, would you therefore wait until they were grown? Would you refrain from marrying? In other words, if I did manage to find somebody here in Moab or in Judah and had sons by them, would they then carry out their duty with the two daughters-in-law and carry on for their dead brother? In other words, being the kinsman redeemer, when the brother dies, the one next in line keeps the family line going with the widow. So Naomi says, it's not reasonable for me to think that you would wait until baby boys were grown up to be able to take their job. So she says, no, my daughter, for it is exceedingly bitter to me for your sake that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me. Then they lifted up their voices and wept again, and Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. And she said, see, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. So Orpah doesn't die, but she goes back to Moab, and now we're just with Naomi and Ruth. She says, see, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law. But Ruth said, do not urge me to leave you or to return from following you. For where you go, I will go. And where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord do so to me, and more also, if anything but death parts me from you. And then Naomi saw that she was determined to go with her, and she said no more. So the two of them went on until they came to Bethlehem. And when they came to Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them. Now, Naomi's been gone at least 10 years, possibly a little more. And the women said, is this Naomi? I find it a little odd that the men didn't react at all to this, but the women are kind of curious and saying, is this Naomi? And she said to them, do not call me Naomi, call me Mara. Mara means bitter. For the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. I went away full. In other words, she had sons and daughters-in-law, but the Lord brought me back empty. Now, Ruth can't feel too good about that remark, because the only person she knows now in Judah is Naomi. And Naomi's attitude is, I've come back empty. And yet Ruth is still with her. Naomi is a very depressing person to be around now. And Ruth, the only one she knows in Judah, is Naomi. And Naomi is in a terrible depression. Verse 21, why call me Naomi when the Lord has testified against me and the Almighty has brought calamity upon me? So Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, with her, who returned from the country of Moab. And they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. This is rather fortunate, because here's your food source. It's at the beginning of the barley harvest. Now, Naomi had a relative of her husband's, a worthy man of the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. Now, this is the first time that relative is mentioned, and it will be mentioned a bunch. So the next guy is Boaz, and we are told that somehow he's a relative of Elimelech, so we'll just kind of do dot lines like that, but we don't know yet exactly what their relative nature is, but Boaz is a relative of Elimelech. And Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after him, in whose sight I shall find favor. And she said to her, Naomi said, go, my daughter. So she sent out and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. In other words, she's picking up scraps. The reapers are picking up all the good stuff, the good barley, and whatever's left over is kind of a charity case. You let people come behind you and pick up the scraps. So she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the clan of Elimelech. That's the second time we got mentioning of Boaz being relative to Elimelech. And what are the chances of this happening? Well, the chances are pretty good because God is sovereign. Ruth happened to come across the field of Boaz was not chance luck. It was by God's design. It was God's providence. And in looking at this, I found a wonderful definition of coincidence. Coincidence is a small miracle where God prefers to remain anonymous. That's a good definition of coincidence. Verse 4, and behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem, and he said to the reapers, he said, the Lord be with you. And they answered, the Lord bless you. This is quite a friendly atmosphere Boaz has with the workers there. Verse 5, then Boaz said to his young men who were in charge of the reapers, whose young woman is this? And the servant who was in charge of the reapers answered, she is the young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab. She said, let me glean and gather among the sheaves after the reapers. So she came, and she has continued from early morning until now, except for a short rest. Then Boaz said to Ruth, now listen, my daughter. Do not go glean in another field or leave this one, but keep close to my young women. Let your eyes be on the field that they are reaping, and go after them. Have I not charged the young men not to touch you? She's being protected here. And when you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink what the young men have drawn. So he's going to provide her with water. Verse 10, then she fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me since I am a foreigner? That's a very good question. Why have I found favor? Ruth 2:10, she bowed down with her face to the ground and she exclaimed, why have I found favor? Remember, Moab was one of the countries that refused to allow the Israelites passage as they were heading towards the promised land. So there's already kind of bad vibes between Israel and Moab, and yet Boaz is showing Ruth the Moabite good favor. Boaz answered her, all that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of her husband has been fully told to me, and how you left your father and mother in your native land and came to a people that you did not know before. Boaz has been checking her out. He's been asking around. The Lord repay you for what you've done, and a full reward be given to you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. Then she said, I have found favor in your eyes, my Lord, for you have comforted me and spoken kindly to your servant, though I am not one of your servants. Verse 14, at mealtime, Boaz said to her, come here and eat some bread and dip your morsel in the wine. So she sat beside the reapers, and she passed to her roasted grain. Now notice here, just in the last few verses, Ruth gets protection from Boaz in verse 9. Boaz provides her with water for her thirst, also that's in verse 9. And he also feeds Ruth from his own table, as we just saw in verse 14. Boaz is certainly taking care of her in a big way. Verse 15, when she rose to glean, Boaz instructed his young men, saying, let her glean even among the sheaves. In other words, go after the good stuff. And do not reproach her. And also pull out some of the bundles for her and leave it for her to glean. And do not rebuke her. So she gleaned in the field until evening. Then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. And she took it up and went into the city where her mother-in-law was. Her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. She also brought out and gave her what food she had left over after she was being satisfied. That was at the dinner Boaz had for her in verse 14. So she brought home leftovers to her mother-in-law. And her mother-in-law said to her, where did you glean today? And where have you worked? Blessed be the man who took notice of you. So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, the man's name with whom I work today is Boaz. Now, up until now, there's no mention at all of Naomi being aware of Boaz being around Ruth at all. So Naomi now has new information. And she said to her daughter-in-law, "May he be blessed by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead." Naomi also said to her, "The man is a close relative of ours." So now we've gone from being a relative to a close relative. They don't say how close, but we're about to see that Boaz is second in line to be the Redeemer. There's only one person in front of him. So Boaz could be as close as, say, an uncle, something like that. And Ruth the Moabite said, "Besides, he said to me today," this is Boaz said to me, "you shall keep close by my young men until they have finished all my harvest." And Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It is good, my daughter, that you go out with these young women, lest in another field you will be assaulted." So she kept close to the young women of Boaz, gleaning until the end of barley and wheat harvest, and she lived with her mother-in-law. So that takes us through the end of the harvest. Don't know how much time passes here, but chapter 3 takes us to a different turn of events. And chapter 3 starts with, "Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, 'My daughter, should I not seek rest for you, that it may be well with you?'" In other words, we should get you a husband. "Is not Boaz your relative?" Again, it's mentioned that Boaz is a relative. "And whose young women you were? See, he is winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor. Wash, therefore, and anoint yourself, and put on your cloak, and go down to the threshing floor. But do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking." Naomi has now changed from being bitter Naomi in a massive depression to Boaz is now on the scene. And if I can get Ruth hooked up with Boaz, my life gets better too. So Naomi changes from bitter to matchmaker. Verse 4, "When he lies down," that is Boaz, "observe the place where he lies and then go uncover his feet and lie down, and he will tell you what to do." As I read that verse, I realized that I almost always have my feet covered in bed too, even if the rest of me isn't. And the easiest way to wake up is when the feet are uncovered. So I don't know if that's a quirk that other people go through, but I was kind of surprised to see that right here in Ruth. Verse 5, "Then she replied, 'All that you say I will do.'" So she's got her marching orders from Naomi, and off she goes. So she went down to the threshing floor and did just as her mother-in-law had commanded her. And when Boaz had eaten and drunk, and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain. Then she came softly and uncovered his feet and lay down. At midnight, the man was startled and turned over, and behold, a woman lay at his feet. He said, "Who are you?" And she answered, "I am Ruth, your servant. Spread your wings over your servant, for you are a redeemer." And he said, "May you be blessed by the Lord, my daughter. You have made this last kindness greater than the first, that you have not gone after young men, whether poor or rich." In other words, instead of going to the handsome young men, you came to me and did a nice thing. Verse 11, "And now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you all that you ask, for all my fellow townsmen know that you are a worthy woman." Well, she built a good reputation rather quickly, didn't she? "And now it is true that I am a redeemer." And we see the redeemer being spoken of over and over. In the Old Testament, the kinsman redeemers were relatives who could protect the needy members of the family and sometimes the extended family. They could redeem or buy back a relative that might have been sold into slavery, and the kinsman redeemer could bring them back into freedom. They could also preserve a family lineage of a deceased male by marrying his widow and providing an heir. We say that in Deuteronomy 5 and 6, and since that's just two verses, I'll just go ahead and read you that one. Deuteronomy chapter 25, verse 5, it says, if brothers dwell together and one of them dies and has no son, the wife of the dead man shall not be married outside the family to a stranger. Her husband's brother shall go into her and take her as his wife and perform his duty of a husband's brother to her. And the first son whom she bears shall succeed to the name of his dead brother, that his name may not be blotted out of Israel. So that's the second concept of kinsman redeemer. The third is you can buy, you can land a relative who has sold land outside of the family. And we're going to see part of that coming up. In order to be a kinsman redeemer, whether you're redeeming a person or you're redeeming land or repairing a lineage, you must be first a blood relative. You must be able to redeem, in that case, have the money, and you must be willing to redeem, and you must have all three in order to be the kinsman redeemer. In the story of Ruth, there is a kinsman nearer than Boaz, but he is not able or willing to redeem, and we'll see that coming up. In Christ, we have our kinsman redeemer. The redeemer must be blood related. And Christ became the incarnation that he might be a blood relative to redeem lost humanity. John chapter 1, verse 14 said, the Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only, who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. Now consider how far down Jesus came to man, where he had been on the throne. Had been in heaven. He didn't just order something good to happen. He came all the way down to be kin with us because that's what was necessary for our redemption. We needed a kinsman redeemer. The redeemer must be able. That's part two. And Christ was able. In 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 18, for you know that it was not with perishable things, such as silver or gold, that you were redeemed from the empty way of life, handed down to you from your forefathers, but it was with the precious blood of Christ, a lamb without blemish or defect. Christ was able, and the Redeemer must be willing, and Christ was willing. In Hebrews 9, verse 12, he did not enter by means of the blood of goats and calves, but he entered the most holy place once and for all by his own blood, having obtained eternal redemption. And Paul in Romans 7:14 says, therefore all mankind is in need of a redeemer. The principle of redemption is to be brought back from the bondage of sin and the freedom from its control. Ephesians 1:7, in him we have redemption through his blood, the forgiveness of sins, in accordance with the riches of God's grace. Let's go back to Ruth, where in Ruth says, talking about now about the Redeemer, he says, yet there is a Redeemer nearer than I. Verse 13, remain tonight, he's telling Ruth. If he will redeem you, good, let him do it. But if he is not willing to redeem you, then as the Lord lives, I will redeem you. Lie down until the morning. So she lay at his feet until the morning, but arose before one could recognize another. And he said, let it not be known that the woman came to the threshing floor. And he said, bring the garment that you are wearing and hold it out. And she held it out, and he measured out 6 measures of barley and put it on her. And she went into the city. And when she came to her mother-in-law, the mother-in-law said, how did you fare, my daughter? Then she told her all that the man had done for her, saying, these 6 measures of barley he gave to me, for he said to me, you must not go back empty-handed to your mother-in-law. She replied, wait, my daughter, wait until you learn how the matter turns out, for the man will not rest, but will settle the matter today. And in chapter 4, we see the redemption happening. Now Boaz had gone up to the gate and sat down there, and behold, the Redeemer, this would be the guy who's first in line, the Redeemer of whom Boaz had spoken came by. So Boaz said, turn aside, friend, sit down here. Now, they're at the gate where business is normally conducted. They can do this out in the open, and so you can get witnesses. And we're about to see Boaz do that. He turned aside and sat down. Then he took 10 men of the elders of the city and said, sit down here. And those are going to be his witnesses. So they sat down. And then Boaz said to the Redeemer, Naomi, who has come back from the country of Moab, is selling the parcel of land that belonged to our relative Elimelech. So Elimelech owns some land. He's dead. And as far as the number one guy in line knows, all that's left is his widow. There is no heir. And he's being offered land. Land that, since there is no heir, does not get returned in Jubilee. So if he buys the land, he doesn't just keep it till Jubilee. He keeps it forever because he's completely unaware of any heirs. So I thought I would tell you of it and say, buy it in the presence of those sitting here and in the presence of the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, redeem it. But if you will not, tell me that I may know. For there is no one besides you, in other words, no one of greater stature than you, to redeem it. And I come after you. So Boaz tells him, I'm in second position here. So the first man says, I will redeem it. It's the obvious move to make. When you get to take the land and keep it with you through the Jubilees and have it as part of your estate to pass down. And Boaz leaves out one important point. He says, oh, I forgot something, my bad. Then Boaz said, the day you buy the field from the hand of Naomi, the widow, you also acquire Ruth, the Moabite, the widow of the dead son, the dead person in line to inherit, in order to perpetuate the name of the dead in his inheritance. So he says, yeah, these people might be gone, but Ruth still exists. And he tells the number one person in line, if you want to buy the land, Ruth comes with it. And as a kinsman redeemer, you have to show up in this spot, do your job, and provide a son who will be the heir of that land. Now all of a sudden that land doesn't look too good. The Redeemer said, I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I impair my own inheritance. So the Redeemer has his own son who is going to inherit that land. And if we start adding this into it, we start splitting things up, and all of a sudden the inheritance becomes less than what he thought it was going to be for his son. So if he goes ahead and buys the land, he also buys into Ruth, has a son through Ruth, and ends up splitting up his inheritance. He's not interested in that. Verse 7, now this was the custom in former times in Israel concerning redeeming and exchanging. To confirm a transaction, the one drew off his sandal and gave it to the other. And this was the manner of attesting in Israel. So when the Redeemer said to Boaz, buy it for yourself, he drew off his sandal. And then Boaz said to the elders of all the people, you are witnesses this day that I have bought from the hand of Naomi all that belonged to Elimelech and all that belonged to Chilion and Mahlon. Also Ruth the Moabite, the widow of Mahlon, I have bought to be my wife to perpetuate the name of the dead in his inheritance, that the name of the dead may not be cut off from among his brothers and from the gate of his native place. You are witnesses this day? Then all the people who were at the gate and the elders said, we are witnesses. May the Lord take the woman who is coming into your house, like Rachel and Leah, who together built up the house of Israel. May you act worthily in Ephrathah and be renowned in Bethlehem. And may your house be like the house of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah, because of the offspring that the Lord would give you by this young woman. Now, we can start filling in more of the diagram. He mentions at the top, we got Judah, and then through Tamar, she gave birth to Perez. And there's another twin son too, Zara. which is a very interesting story, but that's not what we're talking about now. And from the line of Perez, through various people outlined also in the Bible coming up, Perez's line comes down to Boaz. Boaz now takes Ruth as a wife, and they are going to have a son. Boaz and Ruth marry, and she became his wife. And he went into her, and the Lord gave her conception, and she bore a son. And then the women said to Naomi, "Blessed be the Lord, who has not left you this day without a redeemer. And may his name be renowned in Israel. He shall be to you a restorer of life and a nourisher of your old age. For your daughter-in-law who loves you, who is more to you than seven sons, has given birth to him." Then Naomi took the child and laid him on her lap and became his nurse. And the women of the neighborhood gave him a name, saying, "A son has been born to Naomi." In other words, Naomi through Ruth. They named him Obed. That's the son to Ruth. And Obed was the father of Jesse. And Jesse is the father of King David. If Boaz does not become the kinsman redeemer, we use red for royalty here. It comes from Perez down here, and we got a dead stop. There's nowhere to go. But Boaz, as kinsman redeemer, marries Ruth, and down comes Obed, Jesse, King David. And the line here continues from King David down to King Jesus. And we see how important this story is of Boaz as kinsman redeemer. Because without Boaz doing this, there is no Obed, no Jesse, no King David. The whole royalty of Jesus falls apart. Now, the genealogy of David, these were the generations from Perez. Perez fathered Hezron. Hezron fathered Ram. Ram fathered Amminadab. And so forth, on down to David. Boaz keeps his family alive. He restores the lineage, because we did have this here. But because this went out, as this son died, there was no place to go. The lineage is restored over here, and we come down through King David and Jesus. That is the kinsman redeemer. In Matthew chapter 1, verse 5, Salmon was the father of Boaz, whose mother was Rahab. Boaz was the father of Obed, whose mother was Ruth. Obed was the father of Jesse. Jesse, the father of King David. David was the father of Solomon. On down and down until we hit Jesus the Christ. Take the union out of Boaz and Ruth, and everything crumbles. But he redeems the line to keep the royal line and to keep the story of King Jesus going on. King Jesus is our Redeemer who gives us new life. He gives new life to the elect. And Ephesians 1, 7 again says, "In him we have redemption through his blood." It is Jesus who is our kinsman Redeemer who came down to be in flesh and save us. In accordance to the riches of God's grace. And the same group in Romans chapter 8, verse 30, the same group that he predestined, he called, and that same group he also justified, and that same group he glorified. And as I was thinking about Jesus coming down from his glory to be part of sin, the first thing that occurred to me is, as Jesus became in flesh, he had to go, "What's that smell?" Because we know that God hates sin. He absolutely hates sin, and yet Jesus came down to flesh to live among us. And as I was thinking about the stench of sin that Jesus is dealing with down here, you won't hear this at another sermon. I used to work at a car wash in Long Beach. And one thing you do, especially in California, when you're doing that kind of work, is you must recirculate water, because you can't afford to use fresh water every time. So every time we would wash a car, the water would go down into a drain. It would drain out into a large pit, and all the water, soap and everything, would go in there. The heavier contents would drop down, and then you would funnel more water off the top and rinse the next car. Now, that was good news because it kept the soap in the water, and it didn't cost you as much money for soap. But what that did mean was the big container, the big trap that took all this water in, as the dirt went down and down, it got obviously more packed with dirt and crud, and it's kind of like a quicksand down there. And I had heard stories about people who actually stepped into one, and I didn't hear any stories about anybody who stepped into one and lived, but I heard two stories of two people who fell in and didn't come out. And you end up going right into the stench. In this case, this is like right into sin. And you go right into the muck. And it's like quicksand, and you don't come out. And you don't appreciate how bad it is until it's time to clean it. And, of course, you drain the water out, and you call in specialized people for waste removal. And they take feet and feet and feet of the crud out of there. And then, of course, you go out, and the cycle repeats itself. And I was thinking about the stench of sin that Jesus lowered himself into, that he would be our kinsman redeemer, that, gee, maybe we could have had a different plan if he could have just spoke it and it would have happened. But that's not what the plan is, because Deuteronomy says in order to be redeemed, you have to be kin. And that's God's law, and God's law will be fulfilled by Jesus. And in order for us to be redeemed, Jesus has to be our kinsman redeemer, and he has to come in flesh, however annoying, unpleasant that might be. And I can only imagine what it must be to come from the glory of heaven to in a place where it's a city full of sinful people. And so I finish up with where I was in chapter 4, verse 14, and that is, blessed be the Lord who has not left us without a redeemer. And thank God we have Jesus as our kinsman redeemer. Yes?
There's some interesting names in this story. Mahlon means not well. Chilion means not strong.
Mm-hmm.
Naomi means my joy. And Ruth means comrade. And one time we were sitting in a grocery store, and this lady came up to Marilyn and said, "Did you just call him comrade?"
Ready to call the CIA on you. I was thinking about adding on to this and going to 2 Samuel chapter 21, I think, that talked about kinsmen that needed to pay the penalty for an act that was made by the king back there in a covenant that he broke by killing a lot of people from a certain tribe. And because he broke the covenant, the way to pay for that was the covenant had to be paid for with blood. You couldn't pay it with gold or silver. You killed the people, so blood has to be spilled in order to do that. And 7 relatives, sons or grandsons, were then taken away. People who are not involved in this at all, had no standing, had no, you know, you can't blame them for anything, but that was the price that was paid in 2 Samuel because the kinsmen had to pay the price for the deaths that were happening, and that was the price demanded, blood for blood. And I think that was 2 Samuel 21. So I didn't think I'd ever get around to that, but I'll just kind of add that as a little extra. If you're familiar with it, that kind of fits in too, because you can't pay the price with just silver and gold, but the price in 2 Samuel also had to be paid with blood. And the price for our redemption has to be paid in blood too. So that's tonight. I thank you for coming.